along with Mark Riley. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and we've got classic bits and all new stuff for you today, because this is Morning Citizen. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, and everybody having a relatively decent holiday season. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
I should tell the people that Mark Riley and I are not really here. We're on vacation, but we're going to bring you a show here that's got some new stuff, some old stuff. But you know, I'm pretty excited about the new stuff because we just taped an interview with my friend Judy Gold.
Yeah.
Who is very funny. And I always have a good time with Judy Gold when I'm on the radio with her. See, I'm already talking like an old Jewish person because of Judy. But this was a particularly good and fun interview that I had with Judy. And also we have an interview with George Lakoff, the author of Moral Politics and also the author of the very popular Don't Think About an Elephant, about the reframing of language after the Republicans have stolen it from us for the last 30 years. Now, the original interview with George Lakoff actually lasted 22 and a half hours.
Yes.
And we were able to cut it down to... to a 10-15 minute piece of radio with the perfect essentials of what was talked about. It was a great conversation, but we just don't have that kind of time.
Well, the edit was a miracle, actually. I mean, there was a lot of stuff he laid on us. The plate was full.
I learned a lot of stuff. He just, like, when Lakoff talks, you listen, and he will lay it out piece by piece as long as that takes. And it was a tremendous day of interview.
Yeah.
And we also have, of course, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, has some things to say about how one behaves over the holiday season. So we have an all-new holiday version of the Pashman Rules.
Well, I'm too scared of that.
And much like the Pashman Rules, another great segment on Morning Sedition grew out of some conversations we had with one of our producers. One day we're in the studio, right before the show, our associate producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, walked in with a Snickers bar. And get this, it was the first Snickers bar he had ever eaten. If he had eaten a Snickers bar previous to this, he would have died.
Yeah.
It turned out that he just, for some reason, outgrew a lifelong peanut allergy, and he was going crazy, just like going nuts with peanut experimentation, much like I experimented with drugs when I could. Unfortunately, I was never allergic to drugs. So we sat him down in front of the mic, and basically just to tell us about his exploration of peanut products. And then Pashman was in the studio as well to celebrate. And here it is. Have a listen.
Let's celebrate Brendan's newfound freedom from his peanut allergy now. So you're going to go to the ball game and you're going to be able to proudly say,
yeah, awesome peanuts.
Peanuts.
I never realized. Every day I'm figuring out new things that I can eat.
How long have you not been able to eat peanuts?
All my life.
Oh, wow. Wow. No Snicker bars for you in Halloween.
Just now. Today was the first Snicker. That Snickers you saw me eating?
Yeah.
That was the first Snickers I ever had in my life.
It's great, right?
As I was saying to you, I had a problem with it.
Oh, really?
Because the first thing I ate was a jar of honey roasted peanuts.
Yeah.
And I freaked out. It was so good. And then I got that Snickers bar today, and the nuts were not. Like, it tasted like something was mealy about them.
They're a little off the nuts in the same
way. I was anticipating something great, and the same thing happened with a Reese's peanut butter.
Well, that's, but Reese, you'll start to appreciate that just because it says peanut doesn't mean that has any
right.
relation
well,
to
like
the peanut.
Chunky peanut butter, like, that blew my mind.
Did you get the feeling that you were cheating death at some point?
I put my whole fist in it. No, and I came in before, and you guys were running out of time. You had to go back to the show, and I wanted to know, like, what kind of good peanut type things I should eat, because I have so many options.
You got to get some of those things they roast on the street, because those are.
Oh yeah. No! Don't get those. They roast that stuff in bacon fat, man. Can't you smell it?
Now I really want it.
So after hearing that, you can see why we would want to know what it's like to wake up from a lifelong peanut coma. I'll say it again. He went nuts for peanuts. He went nuts. This should be a commercial. Nuts for peanuts. I'm silly. Well, let's hear another segment of PW celebrating his freedom from the peanut allergy. Do you know what time it is, you guys? Do you know what time it is? Does anybody know what time it is?
It's peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter jelly time!
There you go. That's it. That's what time it is. Let me explain to you what's going on. It means that our associate producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, is in the studio. As some of our listeners may know, a life-threatening allergy had kept P.W. from eating peanuts until about a month ago. Now he is free of his peanut ailment, and as he explores the magical world of peanuts, he joins us to bring us hope, adventure, and the latest entry of the Peanut Diaries. But first, I think we need to get a little background. What is a peanut allergy, Brendan?
Well, guys, I mean, as some of you may know, 1.5 million Americans suffer from a peanut allergy.
That many?
Yeah, and it's responsible for 15,000 emergency room visits a year. So let's lay on the table here the severity of what we're talking about. This is no laughing matter, right?
I knew a kid when I was growing up who had an almond allergy and ate one and almost like choked.
Right, now I still have that.
You do?
Yeah, it's two separate allergies.
You're not free yet.
No, I'm free of the peanuts, but it's an entirely separate allergy. And some people might not know this, but peanuts are not exactly nuts. They're part of the legume family.
Ooh,
and, legume.
Marty.
Wait a minute, isn't that beans?
Yeah, it's from the it's a pea, you know, and
right.
I had to know this stuff, you know, since I was a very small child, because, you know, you go to parties and stuff, and kids are having, like, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and stuff, and you can't touch that.
But did your parents have to, like, you know, hold up, like, almonds and go, evil?
No. In fact, one time...
A can of Skippy, bad!
One time when I was in a supermarket, you know those, like, big, 10-gallon barrels that they'd fill with peanuts,
and
scoop them out.
Yeah.
Well, I grabbed one and was like, started playing with it.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even going to eat it.
Yeah.
And I just broke out all over my body in hives.
Get out.
Yeah,
how old were you?
Probably about 2 years old.
Oh,
my
God.
And that was like the first indication. Was like, no, don't let the kid eat that. And I was allergic to everything.
Guys, a weird question, though. Like, because you know that Lionel, the lion-faced boy, the famous circus freak?
Yeah.
Apparently, the story goes that when his mother was pregnant with him, she watched his father be eaten by a lion or mauled or something. Is there any chance?
There is truth. Not the lion man is not true, but there is truth to the idea that it happens in infancy.
Was your mom like pelted with peanuts?
No, but she probably ate. It's all about it's all about proteins.
Okay.
If you are nursing when there's a certain amount of proteins being fed into your body, you will counteract the amino acids that you need to fend off the allergy. Uh-huh. And what must have happened was my mother had, you know, I don't know that she was like, you know, going on a bender of peanuts or anything, but she ate enough food
that
killed off the amino acids in my body that I needed to counteract the peanut protein.
Maybe when she was pregnant, she was like, I need peanut butter. Like, because they have the weird food thing. I know
it
that my mother smoked and drank when she was pregnant, and I became a compulsive alcoholic addict to cigarettes.
Well, wait, let me write that down, because I got to see what the next stage of this cure is here. If that happens, then we know we're in trouble.
How did that happen? How did the cure happen? You've had this all your life. Hmm. When did you suddenly know that it wasn't a problem anymore?
Well, I had been to a doctor about 2 years ago, and he was like, you should go to an allergist to get that checked out. So naturally, I didn't go. But I was like curious enough to like take a little taste of peanut butter, and like it was felt a little better. And then I wasn't getting the reaction that
was
I was getting.
Was it like bungee jumping though?
Oh, absolutely. That was like, it should have been on like Faces of Death 6.
When you were
sitting
there with that spoon of peanut butter knowing, I can die right now.
Well, what I did is I laid it on a piece of bread and like was slowly taking bites and like thinking like maybe I
did your fiance go, don't kill yourself?
No, I was all alone. I was all alone because I didn't want anybody to like stop me, to intervene, be like, don't eat that. So I did it and I was starting to feel a little lousy from it. You get like a little bit of like a swelling in the back of your mouth.
So
I just stopped. I have like drugs and pen and shots and stuff to take in case it gets out of hand.
Did you have pills? Is it like a syringe on the table?
Yeah, I had it at the ready.
That's right. If you got a slice of bread with peanut butter on it, a syringe and some pills, and a phone. So I'm going in.
Yeah,
I'm going in.
It was. There was a scene in Platoon that reminded me kind of what was going on.
Lord have mercy. What did George Washington Carver do?
Did you put camo on and like a headband?
I'm going in.
I turned slammed on the doors and I came up out of the water and just grabbed the peanut butter. So I was doing for a couple of years. I was slowly trying to taste and see. And the doctor, most recently, I went to an allergist about 6 months ago, and he told me that was actually helping, that I was building up an immunity to it.
Right.
And if I kept going at small stages like that, that I would be able to eventually outgrow it, and that's what happened.
Let's talk about, I know that some people have reached out, some listeners have asked for your help now that we brought this up.
I got an email from one of our listeners.
Let's do it after the break, because we need to know more about, these are the Peanut Diaries, ladies and gentlemen. This is important stuff, Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yes, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
On Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. We're talking to Brendan P.W. McDonald,
one of our
producers here, who is... can we hear that silly song again just for a second? Just for a second, Kalo? I just hear the silly...
Peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter
That's crazy.
And can I say how hilarious it was in the break when, all three of you were like, you got to try peanut chunk ice cream with Russian fiber nuts.
Yeah.
It's so good.
We talked about peanut butter cup ice cream, which is a Ben and Jerry's thing, which is peanut butter ice cream with peanut butter cups in it. And then there's the Baskin and Robbins does a peanut butter ice cream, I think. But then Kayla reminded me of the Häagen-Dazs. And then I thought of the chocolate Häagen-Dazs with the peanut butter in it. That stuff, two teaspoons of that.
I can't wait to be so fat. You're hot.
You're one of those guys that
you're not going to gain a pound.
I've watched you eat. It takes you 2 hours to get to a sandwich. I'm like, then what's wrong with that guy? Would you get on board?
He doesn't eat slow, that's all.
I know, but you're supposed to. It's supposed to be good for you. But me, I blast through stuff. I can't. It's like my enjoyment is completely relative to my pacing. Because people are like, why don't you savor it? I'm not one of those people. I just want to stuff my mouth full of it.
Right. That apple sitting right there doesn't stand a chance.
No, that apple right there is
going to get decimated in about 3 seconds.
Well, that's the problem with the new health thing I'm on, is that, I can plow through the apple and the baby carrots, and still it's not going to be satisfying. So I don't know what to... I don't even want to...
But I must say, Brendan, as a long-time fanatic about peanut butter, not the ice cream stuff, not all the rest, but just plain old slick-on-the-top peanut butter... Welcome to the club.
Well, thank you. I mean, you see me eating about every day here. I bring a peanut butter sandwich. And there are other people who still, can't eat. As I say, 1.5 million people. And I got this email you were talking about.
I keep wanting to integrate that into politics. Were those, you think, Republicans or Democrats?
Red state, blue state, Georgia.
They were liberals. We always take it on the chin.
Okay.
That's what it was.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I used to eat peanut butter and bacon. It was an amazing, amazing taste. Yeah.
Wow. Was your mom like, here we go, Mark, here you're going to have a heart attack? Let's have a heart attack by the time you're 25.
No, when you're 10, 11 years old, it's no big deal.
Peanut butter heart attack. Peanut butter heart attack.
I don't eat red meat anymore.
Put butter on it. Here's some peanut butter and butter. You think your mom was trying to kill you?
How about a peanut butter, butter and bacon? She didn't do what I did. She never knew I did it.
All right.
Well, I want to reach out to these emails I'm getting about the peanut allergies. We got an email from our listener, Meredith, who said that her friend's mother wants to know more about this because her 12-year-old daughter is deathly allergic to peanuts. And some people, they don't serve peanuts on the planes anymore?
Why?
When you open the bag, you're getting the peanut dust in the air, and that could kill someone. Like, that's how sensitive some people are to this allergy. Yeah. So
it's used as a weapon in some countries.
Yeah, right.
The peanut butter dust bomb. They're meeting again. It's the people allergic to peanuts. We can get them.
We can get them all into one.
What's that smell?
Peanuts.
I'm sorry.
Well, if you're afraid of dying from the peanuts, I just hope that, in the couple of funny little minutes we've had here, that I provide a little hope that you will one day taste the gooey goodness of
the gooey
Peter
goodness.
Van.
That's what
And if anybody, wants to know more about this stuff, they should, contact us.
There's somebody out there right now writing a suicide note with a jar of Skippy going, I hope this is worth it. I listened to Brendan on the radio. I don't want to live anymore unless I can experience this.
Well, next time I'm in here, I'll let everybody know, I'm on the road to eating peanuts. So I'll let everybody know what we're actually experimenting with here. Maybe we'll get some, weird, goofy peanut goodness in there. But, you know, as Chico Marx said,
peanuts for you.
I'll see you later, guys. All right, thanks a lot. Brendan B.W. McDonald.
Brendan B.W. McDonald. I want to find out.
I want to hear a song.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Come on. Hit it.
It's peanut butter jelly time. Peanut butter jelly time.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to play that all the time. What are you going to say, Riley?
No, I'm wondering, next week we'll find out which his favorite is.
Yeah.
Of the major brands.
I think we're going to move through a lot of things with Brendan. I got a feeling that this has legs.
Yeah.
The peanut diaries. People out there right now are like, what happened to this show? What are they talking about the issues? Some of us are still fighting for our lives. What do I care if the kid can eat peanut butter? It's peanut butter. Who cares? We're dying. We're dying.
We'll continue to enlighten many of you and annoy many others with more entries from the Peanut Diaries in the new year with Brendan P.W. McDonald, our associate producer. Riley, you have any allergies?
Not really. Okay. I've gotten away. You know, I don't have the tree allergies or the plant allergies or the flower allergies. I'm pretty cool that way.
I don't know. I love the Peanut Diaries only because, you know, it's one thing to be able to try something new. It's another thing to have been forced to, you know, denied that your entire life and then, you know, get to try something new with a vengeance.
I don't know what I would have done had I not been able to eat peanuts. I would have had to eat, like, chicken livers and chitlins and all that stuff my mother made that I hated.
Yeah.
And I got away with peanut butter instead. So I'm glad I didn't have this kind of allergy.
I'm trying to think what in my life would really bother me if I could never eat it. I mean, could you imagine being allergic to ice cream?
That's what I thought you were going
to
say.
And then being able to eat it again? Then you'd eat it exactly how I eat it now. You know, compulsively and with abandon. Never ending. So, coming up, we've got a Pashman Rules for the holiday season, and also up next, Professor George Lakoff from this is extrapolated from a 24-and-a-half-hour interview we did with him a few weeks ago. And we're going to talk to him about reframing, about the Democratic Party and what needs to be done. It's 28 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Previously on Survivor. The tribe was shaken up by the departure of John, who sang his way right off the island.
Let the evil soul.
And with his exit, Alberto became the new tribe suck-up.
Just give me a chance to prove myself.
Then, at the tribal challenge, tribe leader George kept control of the coveted immunity idol and used it to cast away any tribe member who wasn't firmly in his alliance.
I earned capital, political capital, and now I intend to spend it.
Rod, Anne, Spencer, and Dom fell victim to the tribal mandate.
Next.
Colin was obviously not loyal enough. At first, he was in denial of his departure.
No, I'm not leaving today. I just...
But the tribe had spoken, and Colin was dragged from the island, leaving his dignity behind.
Bring the camera back, please. Please.
Some will stay. Others will meet their pathetic end. But in the end, there will be only one survivor. And hey, we all know who that is.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Morning Sedition, your daily wake-up call to arms on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's 34 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And right now, we've got a very special guest. He's the linguistics professor at UC Berkeley, the author of Moral Values and Don't Think of an Elephant. Professor George Lakoff is with us. We had an 82-hour interview with him about reframing the national dialogue. People are always asking us, how can Democrats reframe the debate? Well, here comes some answers. Professor Lakoff, nice to talk to you again.
Pleasure.
Let's talk about not just reframing right now, but you actually met with congressmen. Is that true? Or the Senate? Who did you meet with recently?
Yesterday I talked to the Democratic caucus in the House.
Okay, and how was that? How'd they respond? What'd you tell them?
Well, they responded as positively as any audience I've ever been at. They were terrific.
And what'd you tell them? What exactly was the conversation?
It was very simple. It was just going through Don't Think of an Elephant. It was simply that, going over it, answering their questions about it. Many of them had read it. I did a presentation of it and answered questions straightforward.
So this is the book, Don't Think of an Elephant, which I have. This is Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. Now, clearly the Democrats have had a hard time with this as of late. So, we're up against 30 years of, Republican
think tanking. What were some of the questions the caucus asked?
Well, they're just actually all the usual ones. In fact, the ones that are discussed and they frequently ask questions at the back, a lot of them, the number of people asked what basically what everybody asked, namely, is framing spin, for example.
Okay.
The answer is you don't have to use it as spin. You can use it to express what you really believe, and that's all I advise.
Now in examples of this framing, you talk about in your book, there are two models, the two family models you use for conservatives and progressives or Democrats. You have the strict father model for the conservatives and the nurturant parent model for the Democrats and progressives. My question as of late has been, and this is just from being a progressive and dealing with, you know, some of the problems that progressives and Democrats have in framing, is that everybody is really not on the same page too frequently. So my question is, does the nurturant family model, you know, sometimes create spoiled children?
Only if it's abused, which it, you know, there's a whole section in the book Moral Politics mm-hmm. about this. It's not the nurturing parent model that creates spoiled children. It's the permissive parent model.
Okay.
The nurturing parent model says you raise your children to care about others, to take care of themselves, to have empathy with others. You know, you set limits, but you don't, you know, say, I'm going to beat the shit out of you if you don't do this. You know, what you do is you say, you know, here's, you know, you have to be home by such and such a time, and here's the reason. You know, and you tell them why it is. If they do things that are, you know, wrong, and all kids do, you know, you have them do something to make up for it, something positive.
Professor Lakoff, you said something a couple of minutes ago that really struck me. Framing versus spin. Because you said that some people asked whether framing was, in fact, spin. And it's interesting that they seem to have two very different connotations to most people.
Well, they mean totally different things. Framing is the most ordinary thing in the world. Every word comes with a conceptual frame that tells you what the word means. So a word like table has a, you know, is framed. That is, it has a, you understand it as having a top and a support, something supporting the top, and so you can put things on the top and so on. That's a frame. That's the content of that frame. Most ordinary thing in the world, we think in terms of frames. Now, sometimes, certain frames, are, part of our brains. That is, we've learned them. When you learn something, like you learn an ordinary word that you use automatically, then the frame becomes physically part of your brain. You know the frame for table. It's there. The word table evokes it automatically.
Right.
Right? You have no choice.
Right.
Right. But there are other ideas that have to be put together. And, you know, so there's a difference between frames that become part of your brain and frames that haven't. And it takes a lot of repetition, usually, before a frame becomes part of your brain. And that's what the conservatives have learned. So, you know, they repeat tax relief over and over and over until it becomes part of people's brains. And then it defines common sense. So that whenever you go on one of these Punch and Judy shows where, you know, O'Reilly has, you know, a liberal and a, you know, and a conservative and so on, the conservative only has to say tax relief, and the liberal has to explain, because the frame has to be built up anew every time, and it's not just automatically there in people's brains.
I like that analogy, because that assumes that they're both puppets. So, let me ask you another question about this, about the Democratic framing. Now, I guess it's a two-part question. Why has it taken so long, or if at all, for Democrats to revisit their own frames? And what are some of the ones, what should we start to reframing right away, and what ideas have you got on that?
Well, you have to reframe whole systems. You don't just do it for a day and expect it to work. And not only that, what the conservatives have done over 35 years is create an entire system of framings that they can then use. Take the Social Security debate. They have a very large list of frames that they can simply call up. you know, they can, and then use as part of an argument that sounds like common sense. For example, you know, you can't trust the government. The government is bloated, inefficient, et cetera. It just wants to take your money. We live in a free enterprise system. Free markets are good. Privatization is always better than the government. You know, these are ideas that get built up over a long period of time, not just overnight. They didn't just come out and start saying it one day and everybody got it. So you take notions like that and you say, okay, what's going on with Social Security? So here are the elements of their Social Security story. All of them built up over time. The government is wasteful and inefficient. The free market works. You can spend your money better than the government can. Investments in the market, you know, are safe and can grow. You're better off on your own. Privatization is always good. They put these together and you get a story about why we should get rid of Social Security. What is the opposite thing? What do we have to have? What are the elements that, you know, have to be there? Well, you have to talk about and get people, you know, the idea of investment in America and Americans. So, for example, you know, what do taxes go for? Taxes go, among other things, a large number of things, for investments that we make that we all benefit from, like, you know, a highway system. Taxpayers paid for the development of the Internet. Taxpayers paid for the training of our scientists and our medical folks, medical researchers. The court system, which is mostly corporate law. I mean, these are things paid for by taxpayer investments. And, you know, businesses get the dividends and ordinary people get the dividends. That's an idea. I had it down. Tell it to you. It has to be told over and over again until you can simply say, invest in America and everybody gets it. Or you talk about, American dividends and everybody gets it.
So couldn't you just say, though, in a simple frame that they're gambling with your future?
That's next, and that's absolutely right, but it's a different frame.
Okay.
It's this one says the free market isn't free.
Right.
It's a separate frame.
Okay.
The one about gambling is very important. And there what you want to use is a great prototypical example that just came out. You've heard that Tom DeLay's PAC just lost over $450,000 in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Was it Frist or
that
DeLay?
Tom DeLay. It was Frist, not DeLay.
Right, Frist. Exactly. That's a great Frist. Example. So
we have the Frist Retirement Fund. An account. But the idea is this is gambling, and you need a very good example like Frist's loss to say, look, hey, we've got this is a gamble, and these are Las Vegas accounts.
Well, let me ask you something, Professor. Now, as Democrats, you know, I mean, how are we going to, you know, stay on top of this? How are we going to get the people that somehow or another, the people that are most at risk for losing their, you know, everything because of Republican policy, the people who are in the lower to middle class, who are somehow hypnotized by not only these framings but by this strict father model that you're talking about, and they'll be hypnotized by it despite their economic standing in the world.
They're not hypnotized.
Okay.
It's important to understand these models. I know it's not like I made them up or something. These models describe how their brains have been structured from possibly from the time they were kids. You know, there are a whole lot of people in the country who live by a strict father model. We all have it. I mean, if you walk into a Schwarzenegger movie and you understand it, you at least have a passive strict father.
You got to fight that.
Well, the thing is, what you got to do, there's only one way to do it.
Yeah.
You can't go in and change people's brains. The only thing you can do is activate their nurturant model. That is, they do have that, and you can try to do that. But you're not. The idea that they're hypnotized and you can just snap them out of it is false.
Okay, liberals, are you writing this stuff down? Because the professor is giving a quiz later in the show, and he grades on a really steep curve. So write it down. And if you're not writing it down, remember this stuff. This is what we've got to do to win. We'll hear more when we come back.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
It is.
We are now into our 37th hour of our interview with Professor George Lakoff. Let's get right back into it because we've got to squeeze the rest into about 8 minutes. That's going to be tough. Okay, so now here's the big question. How do we get this, you know, how do we get everybody on the same page in the Democratic Party? Who's in charge of this now? You know, what do we got to do? Who's going to come up with these reframings? You know, how do we get it to the core and how do we make it happen?
First, you have to understand how the other side really works.
Okay.
First, they have something like 80 institutions.
Yeah.
Assistants, think tanks, et cetera. And they don't all agree on everything by any means.
Right.
But they support their intellectuals. They have thousands of scholars there, not just the media. Then, in that, what they've been doing over 35 years is putting out these ideas and finding a language that people resonate to, and that then they repeat it over and over for 35 years until it becomes common sense, not just for the public, but maybe even for liberal reporters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even for liberal reporters might think tax relief makes sense.
You're saying that we've got to just say, look, this is going to take 35 years?
No.
All right.
Some of it will take, you know, 5 or 10.
Okay.
If you do it consistently and right, because you know that. But you can start now, but
okay.
Don't expect it to work overnight.
Well, we've got...
You need to know what you have to start doing, okay?
Yes.
Don't expect a silver bullet.
That
is, you know, the right phrase that will allow you to, or, you know, here it is. You know,
okay.
Social security or personal insecurity. You know, we say, you know, America takes care of its own. They say, you're on your own.
Right.
All true. Nice slogans. But they'll go in one ear and out the other unless...
Tell the story.
You tell the story. But it's not just telling the story. There are bits and pieces, frames, privatization... is inefficient and costly and wasteful.
Right.
The second is that the free market isn't free, and you tell why it's not free.
Right.
The third is that you don't control your own money. You put that in an account, it goes to a broker,
right.
And the broker gambles with it. It's a gambling account,
right.
And you don't control your own money. These are things that have to repeated enough so that when somebody hears, you know, private account, you say, oh, my God, who's gambling with it?
We've actually asked our audience to submit some suggestions for some reframing, and they've come up with some pretty good ideas, like in response to intelligent design in the schools, in response to, you know, how they're trying to take evolution out of the books. You know, someone suggested that we call what we want to put forth as a fact-based education. You like that one?
It's not bad, and it's part of a system.
Yeah, absolutely. Or somebody said maybe we should reframe the choice issue by saying reproductive freedom instead of pro-choice. What about that?
That's been said before.
Right.
It's a problem. Remember first that reframing isn't finding another phrase.
But it's part of it if you put a story behind it, yeah?
Yes, you have to have the story behind it.
Okay,
you have to have it there. Now, to understand what's going on with the issue of whether you want to call it reproductive rights, reproductive freedom, whatever it is, there's a problem that is not generally understood.
Yeah.
So I think we need to analyze the entire structure of the problem. First, abortion is what's called a wedge issue. That is, it's meant to separate some liberals from other liberals.
Divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's what wedge issues do.
Exactly.
But in addition, it's a symbolic issue.
Right.
Just as gay marriage is.
Right.
Marriage is a very good example. People ask, why should somebody in the middle of Iowa care, who's never met anybody who's gay,
right,
care if two people who are gay in Massachusetts want to get married? Why do they care?
Right.
Right? And the answer is they do care and they should care. If you look at the strict father model of the family, which is the basis for their entire identity, in that model of the family, the parents can't be gay. There's no way. It requires a male father and a female mother, and that's it.
That's
right.
that's at the core of what you're talking about. That's what makes them
right.
Intolerant. It makes them homophobic and everything else.
It's at the core of this. It also gives them, it tells them who they are, how to relate to themselves, how to relate in their business, how to relate to others, and, you know, how to relate to their children. And so what this issue does is it evokes an attack on them. Same thing is true with abortion.
Right.
In a strict father family, could the wife just say, I'm going to get an abortion without telling her husband or asking?
Right.
No, because the husband's supposed to be in control.
Right.
Could the daughter just, you know, get pregnant, get an abortion without asking? That would be intolerable. It would challenge the strict father's authority.
Right.
You shouldn't be having sex. You've done something wrong. You need to be punished, blah, blah, blah. You have to first understand that this isn't just about abortion. Secondly, they use the term pro-life, and they're only referring to the fetus.
Right.
However, notice they're not in favor of prenatal care and postnatal care and health insurance for kids and, and so on. So what you need to do, for one thing, is take back life. Choice is a word that comes from the vocabulary of consumerism. Choice evokes shopping.
Right. We want more choices.
I want more choice.
Yes.
Wrong idea.
Right.
Life is a moral term. Choice is a consumer term. Morality beats consumerism every time.
Hopefully. Sometimes in this country, not so clear.
Well, it should beat consumerism, and it certainly does. It's happening that more and more young women want to be called pro-life rather than pro-choice for moral reasons. You can't let them have life as a term. So what you need to do is have a serious life agenda, which means prenatal care for real children because we have a high infant mortality rate, postnatal care for such children because children are dying for lack of care, health insurance for children. We have this asthma epidemic, and why do we have it? Because we don't have a Clean Air Act. You know, we have dirty air. Why is that? Because the Republicans insist on it and don't allow regulation. Therefore, they're killing children.
So,
now, you don't have to talk about abortion as such. And, in fact, I suggest never mentioning the word. Talk about ending pregnancies.
So what I'm getting from you, Professor, is that there is hope. We just have to understand that this stuff's not going to happen overnight. And what we're dealing with is not just an ideology, but these are core beliefs that have been with these people since they were born for generations. So what we need to do is start to commit to our own sense of morality, which is the more correct sense, the more common sense, and start to speak from that place on a consistent level.
That's right. And to understand that everybody has both models, either actively or passively.
Right.
Your job is to evoke a nurturing model in those people. You know, there's a minority of Republicans who are Republican radicals. I would call them extremists and Republican radicals. There are moderate Republicans who basically have a strict father model, say, about economics, but a nurturing model about many other things.
Right.
And they're people we can agree with.
Right.
And the idea is to have them spread that nurturing model to other cases.
Okay.
And the only way to do that is to talk to them in our terms where we agree and find common ground with them. It's very important. Not all Republicans are radical Republicans.
Those are good words to remember. Thanks again to Professor George Lakoff, author of Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values, and Frame the Debate. Hey, Riley, I got some heavy stuff on my chest. Can you help me out?
Well, you know, we've got the Liberal Confessional coming up next. Why don't you step inside, Mark?
All right. It's 2 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. On Air. Now your Dow Jones Money Report on Air America Radio 144.
Along with Mark Riley, it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and we've got classic bits and all new stuff for you today, because this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, and guilt-ridden liberals, of course, and those of you who are without guilt, I envy you. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
How's it going, man?
It's going.
You know, it's weird when we come up with this liberal confessional segment. You know, we originally were trying to do a segment around liberal dilemmas, around the battles we sort of fight with ourselves.
Yeah.
And there are many, of course.
you know, like, and then we came up with the liberal confessional, which is where I confess to you, you know, my transgression.
Yes. And there have been many.
Well, yeah, you know, I think on a day-to-day basis, you know, just by nature of the world we live in, we can't be perfect in terms of the progressive ideology, the progressive agenda, because it's almost impossible to live in this world without polluting yourself somehow. But, you know, right now, before we step into the liberal confessional proper, let's listen to an impromptu confession of that Jonathan Clutch Larson is going to like hearing again. Right, Jonathan?
I have a confession to make. I blew a gasket in here earlier off of the mic. Blew up! Because Larson got under my skin. Clutch Larson got under my skin. And, like, I'd like to blame him. You know, I would like to blame him. I was
go ahead. You got the blame button right there.
I was screaming like a child, yelling at him, because I thought, what was that even about?
It was about maybe 6:58.
Oh, no. Clutch is going to get on the mic.
You did blame me.
I blamed, yes.
Not well, that you would like to. You have.
Well, okay. All right. Well, I will retract some of that blame. What happened was, and I apologize. I'm going to apologize. Now you're going to leave. Look at that. You take the apology on mic, mister.
That's right.
Okay. Well, what happened was is that you said something, and I interpreted it as you saying, here's what I think it was like, I thought I was running out of time, you know, on a tease. And you said, but you weren't. And I said, yeah, but the music cues led me to believe that I was. And you go, yeah, but you weren't. And then I took that to mean you're stupid. And
what I meant was you're an abysmal excuse for a human being. When I say you had plenty of time for the tease, what I mean is you're an idiot. Why are you even on the air? That's generally what I'm trying to convey when I say you had plenty of time for the tease.
There you go. Now you know, right?
Well, I feel, you know, luckily I have this.
I was wrong.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jonathan. I apologize. I'm glad we cleared that up.
There you go.
I absolve you of your sins.
Thank you very much. Wow. Thank God he let me off the hook. I can be such a child. Imagine that, listeners.
This sounds
Mark
like
Mark Maron, immature. Can you imagine that?
Sounds like the christening scene from The Godfather.
Bless me, Brother Riley. I've sinned big time.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, listen, buddy. I bought some running shorts.
There's nothing in the Bible against running shorts, young man.
They were Nike running shorts, okay?
Oh, you mean Nike in the global sweatshop sense? The swoosh that ain't fair labor practices all over the world, that Nike?
I know. I really try to stay away from all things Nike. But listen, Brother Riley, these shorts are fantastic. They're made out of this new dry-fit fabric that doesn't get all sweaty. They're nice, right.
Colors. The 8-year-old Indonesian boy who sold those shorts, I'll bet he gets all sweaty. And for $10 a week, he can't even afford to buy a pair of those shorts.
Oh, man, can I just buy a pair of shorts without feeling guilty? I like these shorts. You understand?
Of course you like the shorts. That's how they get you. No one wants to snap the chicken's neck, but everybody loves KFC. Don't you see that by continuing to purchase Nike products, you are perpetuating a cruel economic imperialism that keeps these countries impoverished? You should take those shorts back to the store immediately.
I can't.
What do you mean you can't? As the man says, just do it.
I can't because I already wore them, Riley.
Not only does that create a disgusting mental picture, it is morally wrong. I feel you might profit by some penance.
All right. Okay, you're right. Lay it on me. What do I got?
As your penance, you must shackle yourself to a table, turn up all the heat in your house, and sew 50 pairs of dry-fit shorts in a 14-hour day, pausing only when your neighbor comes over to whack you with a bamboo cane.
Wow, man. That's rough. I guess I deserve
it. Be thankful you didn't have to make shoes.
All right.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. I don't know whether anyone else is going to want to confess their liberal sins after hearing you hand out a harsh penance like that, Riley, but if anyone out there does want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call right now.
Any chicken neck snappers in the audience, call us.
I did feel bad, man. But I wore the shorts yesterday. I'm ashamed to say it. But
you loved them, though, didn't you?
Well, I mean,
you liked them.
They're light.
They felt great.
There's got to be another way. I bought some cotton ones along with it, just American-made, crappy Champion cotton ones. They probably aren't even American-made, but I didn't see. I just, oh, man.
Couldn't you have gotten, like, some fake Nikes?
Oh, man.
You know, some Fikey or
skiddly bop bop.
All right, now we're going to hear some of the confessions from liberals like you. Obviously, we can't hear from your personal confessions since we're on tape. But if you want to confess while you're listening along to the next segment, how about if Brother Riley gives out a blanket absolution right now?
All right. I absolve you from all your sins, liberal, conservative, and otherwise. Do your penance. Do the right thing. You're all right with me.
Ah, nothing like an old school plenary indulgence. Thanks, Riley. We'll hear those confessions and a lot of new stuff, too, coming up in the hour when we come back.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
It's Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Some of our listeners have already paid a visit to the Liberal Confessional. Let's hear what kind of penances Riley and I handed out.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go, Alexis. Good morning in Miami. How are you?
Hey, Alexis.
Good morning. Good morning. Greetings from Miami.
What's going on?
Well, Liberal Confessionals, I have a pretty typical liberal thing that most liberals don't admit to, which is I have a pretty negative reaction toward a lot of Christians.
You have a negative reaction to a lot of conservative Christians.
Yeah. Are you related to Mark Maron by any chance?
I know exactly how you feel, Alexis. You know, what I have been taught, and I don't know if there's a penance. I guess your penance is to try and behave in a more Christian way.
Well, yeah. It recently came up because a very good friend of mine, now I was raised not with the law of religion, but I'm Jewish, and my good friend is Jewish too. And she married a guy, and through their marriage, they've become messianic.
Oh.
Do you know what those are, yes?
Yes.
And so she told me about this, and I got really, really upset, really, really upset. And I went and talked to a friend of mine, Rabbi Jeff, who's listening.
Yeah.
And he asked me a key question. He said, would you be so upset if she said she had converted to Buddhism?
Right.
And I said, no. And he goes, okay, then, now you know what the problem is.
The problem is we have
the Christianity, not the fact that she wasn't Jewish. It was the fact that she was becoming a Christian, and it's very difficult for me. So I realized I had to deal with it because it wasn't her changing. Because if she'd become a Buddhist, I wouldn't care.
Right. So it seems like your rabbi gave you the penance that you needed to to process.
Yeah, the penance
it.
Is that I'm the racist. It's my problem.
Well, I think that that my mistake is, Alexis, is that a lot of times I get aggravated with the sort of right wing Christian agenda in terms of denying people their private freedoms and denying people their rights and wanting to legislate religion, that I assume, I make assumptions about all of them, that they're all condescending and that they're all wanting to proselytize me and change the way that I see freedom. But I guess they're not all like that. I've been told that there are plenty of evangelical Christians that voted for Kerry, and that Jesus in his purest form was really the definition of liberalism.
Yes, well, I'm still working on that.
All right.
You know what the heart won't accept, right?
That's there right. Well, go. We forgive you here, Alexis, and we hope you feel better.
Thank you, Alexis.
You take care. Bye. All right, let's take another. It's funny, the whole Messianic Jew thing, because I did a thing on Tough Crowd where I said, black Republican is like a Messianic Jew. He doesn't. All right, David.
You better tell Kenneth Blackwell out in Ohio.
Exactly. David in Atlanta, how are you?
Good. I'm in Atlanta. I'm a transplant from San Francisco in the Bible Belt.
I'm assuming that was for work and you had to go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
So I'm stuck here, a rose among the thorns.
Uh-huh.
And my boss, I have a confession, is my boss, she's very evangelical, born-again Baptist, mm-hmm. and insists that we, at company functions and with clients, that we, bow our heads and get thanks and all that rigmarole.
Oh, no.
I go through with it, and I guess that's my confession, is that I go through with it and I don't stand up and say, I don't think this is appropriate. And so that's my huge confession to you guys.
Well, so you're climbing up the corporate ladder? Is that what you're doing,
no.
David?
Well, I'm trying.
David, your penance is you have to stand up.
Hey, why don't you go to the Gold Club, okay? That's your penance.
That's converted church now.
Oh. It is?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, you're not serious.
No, I am.
What? You mean the John Stark Memorial Room is now turned into a church? You know about the Gold Club, Maren.
Come on.
The Gold Club is the premier topless club in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not anymore, apparently.
Not anymore, yeah. What, they move it?
No, they got the pole still, no.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you got quite a thing to wrestle with, but I would definitely I think that you got to say something.
Yeah,
you just say that I'm uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, I mean it's not really right.
But see, don't call Maren if your boss fires you for this. All right.
Right.
No, do right. call us, actually.
Yeah, do call us. We'll absolve your boss of whatever sins she may have committed.
Do what you
so
can.
Stand up and say, hey, I just don't agree with this, and just...
Say,
yeah.
Hey, I'm from San Francisco, damn it.
Well, no, I know. You don't got to stick it in their face and say, look, your God is silly. But, I mean, but I mean, you know, it seems inappropriate to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I don't think that's, there's anything wrong with saying that it's inappropriate.
Yeah. It's funny, though. Because,
if you can, David, if you can.
Okay. But, you know, the New York Times did a big article about this. Thanks, David.
Thanks a lot, David.
They did a big article about how this kind of fundamental Christianity is emerging in workplaces all over the country.
I know, it's inappropriate.
Scary.
Let's take another call here. Lisa in San Francisco listening to The Quake. We got a minute, about a minute. What do you got?
What do you got, Lisa? You sinner, you?
Oh, I am so glad, you guys. Thanks for taking the call. I love you. Oh, I was really... I hate myself, and but I can't return it because I already gave it to him.
Yeah.
I went to Sports Mart,
mm-hmm.
and I wandered throughout the store for quite an extensive period of time, and I bought a Nike sweatshirt because it was the nicest one.
Yeah.
And it was a special birthday present for him. Ooh, what's he going to do to me?
Well, I'm going to – I think that a couple of these – I just got a couple lashes with the whip.
A teening.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay. I'll bend over.
Okay, here. Oh, I'll take a couple more. How is that? You okay? Okay. Okay.
Well, are you San Franciscans?
Well, now I got to take a break.
I'm actually a little bit north in Marin County.
Oh, okay. You're in Marin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got a cousin lives up in Cotati. I know.
Oh, God. I love Cotati.
Yeah. So I guess I would just lay the responsibility on your boyfriend. If he can live with it, you know, you've paid your penance. I got to whip you a couple times.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay, good.
Thank
you
so much.
See you later.
You
too.
Bye-bye.
She's easy to please.
Oh, that could have went on for a while.
Oh, yeah, it could have.
I felt that I was sliding down the slope of inappropriateness there.
Frat house?
Not frat house.
Just
no.
Non-propriety.
Just a simple sort of, S&M relationship that was unfolding that could have really blossomed into something had I let it.
Yeah.
Sharon in Florida, what's on your mind?
Hey, Sharon.
Hey, how are you guys?
I'm okay.
So good. Yeah, I have this real conflict going on here because I'm a liberal.
Yeah.
But I carry a gun.
Wow. Well, you
really?
Know,
yeah.
So what happened?
Are you a cop?
No.
Wait a minute. Is the gun legal?
Yeah, it is.
Is it registered, you infidel?
Yeah, it's registered. I got a permit. I got everything. But, like, you know, even when I went to... all those rallies for John Kerry and everything, I had to leave it at home and everything.
Well, yeah, that would be a good idea. You don't want any of your Kerry supporters end up eating hot lead because you, you know, they fell on your foot or something.
No, but I carry a gun, so I don't know.
Wait a minute. Is this for personal security? Are you afraid?
It is for security, yes.
Do you think it's wrong?
No.
Okay. Well, then I guess that, you know,
then you're absolved.
You're absolved.
You know how we liberals
do. Thanks for sharing that, though.
Need to feel conflicted.
But that's one of those issues, man. You know, like I said, I grew up with guns, and, you know, obviously there's too many guns on the street, and there's too many gun deaths in this country, but there's some part of me as well that's sort of like, well, you know, if you got a gun at home because, you know, you want to protect your house and you want to protect your stuff and you don't want to get killed or robbed or something, there's some part of me that says that's got to be okay.
But she's got a carry permit, man. Pistol packing Sharon over here.
Well, maybe Sharon's a little
in
more
in New York,
frightened.
You couldn't get away with this.
No, obviously, but Florida's like the Wild West, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know. You can buy your guns right next door to the McDonald's.
But there's some part of me that believes that responsible gun ownership is possible and should be allowed, I have to admit. Evan in New York, listening to WLIB. What do you got?
Hey, Evan.
Hi. I'm a tree-hugging, blog-writing liberal.
Uh-oh.
And I have to confess, I've been eyeing Arnold Schwarzenegger as a potential...
Wait a minute. Wait. What do you mean by eyeing?
A potential.
Well, not in a sexual way.
Oh, okay.
But as a potential okay candidate for president.
But you're a Democrat, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Very, very left-wing. Progressive liberal Democrat.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Evan. I've had some of the same feelings about Arnold in the sense that I look at him, I realize he's not your run-of-the-mill Republican. You know, he does have some his pro-stem cell research. He seems to be doing some good things with social policy in California. But I think we're buying into the hype. The truth of the matter is, just because he's married to a Kennedy, he's still the son of a Nazi, and he's just a movie star. And I think what we're doing is we're actually we're seeing strength in the wrong places. So. I'll absolve you only because I've had some of the same feelings, but I think you should purge yourself of those.
Purge yourself. Watch a Predator movie.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't buy a Hummer then?
No, definitely not. Maybe a gun. Maybe
Toyota
a gun.
Prius.
You can buy a gun, but not a Hummer.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks a lot, Evan. Stuart, what's your confession, my friend?
What's up, Stuart?
How you doing, guys?
I'm okay.
Good morning. I was so depressed after the results of the election that I said that I'm about 51 years old, and I said that I was going to just live in my own little bubble world, that I wasn't going to watch any more political talk shows,
right.
I wasn't going to listen to the radio anymore.
Yeah.
I probably won't get a woman pregnant at this point, so I don't care about the abortion rights.
Uh-huh.
I was going to dumb myself down to the rest of America, that I was going to watch all the reality shows that I've never seen before. And I have to confess that I just started to come back, obviously, to starting to listen to radio again and watch some of the political things that are going on, and find it very disturbing what's going on with the cabinet and such.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty much what I have to say.
Here's your penance. Yeah, I'm glad you're back, and I appreciate you coming back, but I think you're going to have to try to get on a reality show.
Yeah.
Get on a reality show.
Yeah,
maybe my big fat obnoxious boss.
Yeah, maybe Survivor. Is there another Survivor you can get on?
I've never seen this show, so I don't even know what it is. But,
me neither.
I don't either, actually.
You guys were right on that Schwarzenegger deal. What is his qualification to run the nation, other than he's a B actor? And he was the son of a Nazi. You got that right on. I have no idea what he's doing in California.
Yeah.
And you know, these.
Boy,
people,
you are back, Stuart.
Yeah.
You're back with a vengeance.
You are.
Thanks a lot, Stuart. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
You know, it feels good to have saved so many liberal souls, doesn't it, Riley?
Amen.
If any of you need to ease your burdens, we open the confessional doors again next Tuesday morning. And, you know, also, please, hang out here because we got Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey, with an all-new holiday Pashman Rules coming up. 28 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, courtesy of Air America Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
We're listening to Morning Sedition. You're listening to it. We're on vacation.
Yeah.
Hey, how do you
like
that?
Baby.
It's 34 past the hour. We brought you our favorite edition of the Pashman Rules earlier this week, but right now we are pleased to present a brand new holiday edition of Morning Sedition, special guide to life, courtesy of our editorial producer. I don't know if this is going to catch on, but Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, is back. All right? You know why he's back? Because... Riley, you know why he's back?
I know why he's back.
It's because modern life has grown increasingly hectic these days, hasn't it, Mark?
It certainly has.
And we here at Morning Sedition want to help out. So now in the studio is a man known to spend an inordinate amount of time pondering subjects both large and small and meaningless, I might add. So much so that we've decided that it constitutes a philosophy. I'm kidding, Dan. Which we call Pashman's Rules. Here now is our editorial producer, Dan Pashman. How are you, Dan?
I'm good, guys. How are you? Merry, happy Chrismica.
Oh, don't say
Chrismica. Oh, don't do that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
There's no Chrismica. There's Christmas and Hanukkah. Don't buy into that, man.
Yeah.
You know, don't let them bully you.
It doesn't... Oh, I'm not getting bullied.
But I, as a Jew,
yeah,
which we don't need to talk about just yet because I think we want to talk about gift-giving first.
But sure, but anyway.
As a Jew, didn't you feel jealous when you were growing up of Christmas?
There were probably maybe a short period of time, but honestly, the predominant feeling that I always had was a feeling of feeling cool.
Because
I always felt like... Like that's what all the kids are doing. All the kids are doing that. Like that's why I took French class instead of Spanish class, because all the kids were taking Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like to go against the grain, Maron. I'm a little bit
different?
Of a rebel.
You know what's different between me and you?
What's that?
I'll tell you about going against the grain. I took a proficiency exam to get out of my language requirement. That's I so badly did not want to take Spanish or French.
Right.
This was actually in college. That I took a stupid test, so I wouldn't have to take it. Isn't that pathetic?
Wait, so the lower you scored?
Exactly. I just couldn't wrap my brain around languages.
So did you pass or fail, or which were you trying?
I got out of it.
You got out of it. He went to metal shop instead.
So, all right, Dan. So you felt special as a Jew, but I also felt, let me just say,
please.
I guess,
as a Jew, you know, we had, I thought it was kind of silly, the dreidel. And I thought that it seemed to me that the Christmas stuff, the red and the blue and the lights and the candies and everything else, like, it was all we had were the Maccabees and this story about stones and war and...
That's
what?
A way better story than just a kid getting born.
No, I know. I'm not discrediting
not it. Just any kid, infidel.
We had eight crazy, we got eight nights. You know, I got so much better than
eight
that.
Crazy nights. It was crazy. Are you kidding?
Actually, you know what? If we have time later on, I'll tell the story of my Hanukkah miracle of motivation, senior year of college. That was a great moment.
I think you have to tell that story right now.
Okay, well, then I will.
Yeah.
I, you know, my motivation in college waned on a steady decline from the time I arrived in college in my senior year. I was less than, you know, by the time I was a senior, I felt like I'd mastered college, and I was almost offended at professors who dared make me do work. Because I felt like I know how to give you what you want to get good grades, and so why are you wasting my time?
It's another window into the passion of the soul that makes me all the more distrustful of this confidence.
And your parents paid how much to send you there?
Enough. Right. But, so, you know, I was out of motivation. My first semester, senior year, I completely retired from taking notes at all.
Yeah.
I would just sit in the back of the room doing a crossword puzzle. And, but I was still getting good grades. And so, but that semester, I was, like, so far behind. I was slammed, and I'd not done any work.
Yeah.
And it was the beginning of finals, and I had one night to write a 10-page paper that I had not started.
Yeah.
Wrote the paper in one night. It was the first night of Hanukkah, and I wrote it, and it was a phenomenal paper. I ended up getting an A on it, but...
Did you keep the lamp going all night long with the oil that was on the special?
It was the Hanukkah miracle of motivation. You see, what happened, Mark, was that I thought this was my last great stand as a student, one night of writing this 10-page paper in one night and making it a really good paper. But the motivation lasted for eight miraculous nights. And I ended up acing all my finals the whole rest of the week and getting the best grades I ever got in any semester.
You know what I like about you, Pashman?
What's that?
Your ability to mythologize yourself. That there's this, like, the unfolding tale of Pashman, the myth of Pashman.
Yeah, there you
that's
go.
That's what I call the Hanukkah miracle of motivation.
That's a very touching story. Yeah. Now, let's get back to giving the Hanukkah miracle of motivation. You ever think, you know, I got another word for it, bipolarity.
Yeah, there you go.
Unmedicated bipolar disorder.
Well, you know,
I've never seen you depressed, though, actually.
No, I'm not usually depressed.
Do you do that during the day? Like when I'm not here?
Yeah, when I get home, I just sit at home.
Cry.
Oh, I wish I could be back with Mark and Mark.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever heard him talk to a Super Compton? Because that's when he really kind of goes off the deep end.
Oh, I heard him. I heard him. He tore that guy a new one.
Yeah.
When is this going to happen? I'm up to my knees in water.
I walked into my apartment yesterday, and Compton's in there fixing something else in someone else's apartment, and he's like... He's like, everything okay? Everything okay in your apartment?
You scared him.
Yep.
My super does not speak enough English to comprehend most of what I'm saying. So he stares and looks at me with a baffled face no matter what I'm saying and goes, Saturday? All right, so let's talk about gift giving here while we've got a few minutes.
Well, I have a rather revolutionary
rules.
Yes, I have a rather revolutionary approach to gift giving.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, at Christmas time, I don't really give Christmas gifts. I like to capitalize on being Jewish, you know, at that period of time and just use that as a cop-out for giving Christmas gifts.
You're why they hate us, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't the whole killing the Savior thing.
No, it's capitalizing on being Jewish. Right. Those words right there.
But my friends' birthdays, I don't give my friends gifts on their birthdays per se. I get them a gift whenever I find a good gift.
Uh-huh.
And I don't worry about when that happens to be. It could be on your birthday. It could be a month off. It could be 6 months off.
Right.
And I do that, first off, because it results in my friends getting better gifts.
Okay.
You know, maybe you'll see something in a store somewhere, and you're like, oh, you know, that reminds me of so-and-so.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not the holidays. It's not their birthday, whatever, so you just don't.
As opposed to, like, I got no time, I'll just get him this.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And that results in not such good gifts.
Right.
So I give my friends birthday presents whenever the good present...
When you're inspired?
When I'm inspired.
Just out of nowhere, you go, here's the present.
Happy birthday. They're like, my birthday is 8 months from now.
Yeah, but this is good.
But, like, my friend Dave, at one point, I had given him... I've given him birthday presents, like, through 2006.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
But I recommend the same approach to people giving Christmas gifts. Don't wait for the holidays.
Right. Let's talk about this relationship with Dave.
Yeah, really.
He's giving him presents through 2006.
What constitutes a good gift versus a not-so-good gift? Give me an example of a good gift.
Well, like, it's something that has a personal connection. My approach with gifts in general is you want something that has a personal connection to that person.
Yeah.
All right. Like,
here's a good gift. The response to a good gift is, wow, this is great. Where
here's
did you
a bad
buy
gift.
This?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Great. Yeah, that's nice, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the kinds of gifts that get that second reaction are the kinds that are given at the, are bought at the last minute.
You don't give a lot of thought to.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I had a friend in high school whose dad owned a stereo place. So, like, you always knew he was going to give you, like, a receiver or a turntable, like, you know, stuff that cost $300. And it was all, to this day, it makes me feel awful because you're like, I got you this shirt. And he's like, well, here's a new receiver and a turntable.
Right.
Like, well, give me the shirt back and I guess I'll find you something better, maybe a car. You know? Do you ever feel that, the imbalance of gifts, the injustice of it?
Not usually. I do know what you mean. It has happened. Usually it happens when, like, someone gives me a gift and it's someone that I didn't consider a high enough priority to give a gift to at all.
Right.
Then I don't have jack for them.
Oh, that's
wow.
bad.
That must be embarrassing.
So, okay, so the rule is don't be afraid to buy gifts year-round if you feel that the gift is appropriate for the person you're giving it to, whether it's for a Christmas or Hanukkah present or a birthday present. But, you know, instead of, like, just being a freak passman, you can wait till the date. You can buy the gift and wait till the date.
I guess, but it's fun to surprise your presents with gifts when they didn't even know a gift was coming.
Well, yeah, but then what about the day then that comes their birthday or Hanukkah, and you're like, don't you remember I gave you the thing?
Exactly.
Yeah. So he gives you a gift on the right day, and he's got to sit there and feel like an unsatisfied dork.
No, I think that the plus they get when they're surprised with a gift outweighs the potential negative of them not getting gifts on their special day.
You're just building the myth of passion. This is how you're rationalizing and protecting yourself.
No, no. The one thing I will say, though, is that...
Dismiss that. All right, go. Moving on.
Error. Does not compute.
Criticism not valid. Right. Moving on.
The one thing I will say is it's very important to tell your friends that you've adopted this policy.
Oh, okay.
Because otherwise they're going to be very confused.
Prior notice.
Right. You know, so that if their birthday comes and goes, or if Christmas comes and goes, and you haven't gotten a gift, they won't think that you're ditching them or that you're screwing them over. They'll be like, oh, don't forget the policy.
Right.
Remember? I give gifts whenever I get a good one.
Is there a signing ceremony? Do you present them with paperwork? Do you have your father?
Do you write all this down?
Draw up some papers from Louis Bashman, Esquire?
Yeah, just show up in my dad's office. He'll have some papers for you to sign so just show that you can't hold this against
me. Does this stuff hold true whether it's for male friends or female friends? I mean, if you know, your girlfriend, you do this too also?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, for example, my cousins, Carrie and Jen, I'm working on a mixed CD for both of them. I don't even remember when their two birthdays are. They're not the same day.
Wow, hope as fuck, because this is very compelling.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more Passman's Rules after this. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Waging a war of words against stupidity.
Morning's Edition
on Air America Radio.
Back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We're in the middle of a Passman's Rules bit here. A bit. We're here in a very important moment where, you know, I was listening to everything you were saying before the break. So refresh my memory.
You were listening that closely,
yeah,
huh?
What were you talking about? Yeah, I know you mentioned family members, your cousins, something.
My cousins, Carrie and Jenna.
About Passman was flying during there was some where you came close to the sun, your wings melted.
The baby was about to get hit by the bus, and I carried it away.
Oh, yeah, okay,
This was just an example of my gift-giving policy, that I've been working on a mix for them. Their birthdays are not the same day, but they have similar musical tastes, and I've been working on a mix for them, and I'm going to give it to them on the same day. It's going to be called Carrie and Jen's Birthday Mix.
Oh.
And I'm going to give it to them on a day that isn't either of their birthdays.
Wow. How old are they?
They're 30-something.
So I guess, you know, my birthday was in September, so I guess that pretty soon you'll be giving me my present a year later.
There's no telling, Mark. You might not get a present from me for 5 years, and then you could get 10 presents in a week.
Oh, wow.
Again, hinging on rationalization, but nonetheless a pretty good justification.
Mark, every morning when you wake up could be the day.
Then I get it.
It's like the lottery or something.
Right, exactly. See how much fun that is?
I wonder if this is Passman Day. I know what you're working towards. You're working towards having a random holiday named after you, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it. Passman Day.
Any day could be Passman Day.
That's right. Who would have the power to declare that holiday?
Only you, Dan.
Wow.
Right.
I know.
That'd be so badass.
You could do it every day.
Yeah, right.
So you're a Jew.
True,
as I said. And, you know, I'm a Jew as well. So how do you deal with the whole, Jewish Christmas, you know, Christian friends, Jewish friends, people don't care? Is there, like, do you
Do you isolate or do you, how do you deal with it?
Well, I mean, I personally love Christmas Day, mm-hmm. being Jewish. To me, it's like the day we get the world to ourselves.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just us. It's just us and the Indians and the Asians.
Yeah, and the movies.
Right. The movie. But the movies is, you know, you can always go to
later in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, and that's certainly an option. You know, but there's so much to do. It's a shame most places are closed. But like, I just love going out, wandering the streets of the city. It's like a ghost town.
Yeah.
You know,
and people are looking at their windows with their cups of eggnog at their parties, going, "There's another Jew."
Right, right.
Wandering streets alone.
Right, exactly. You know, but I mean, you can go skiing.
Sure.
Passman family's gone skiing. We
on Christmas
skiers,
Day.
Yeah.
The Passman family.
Yeah, well, my parents tried to get us into skiing. I was the only one that really got into it at all.
Did you guys ski on Mount Olympus?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Are there large numbers of Jews who do both, celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas?
There are certainly a few. When we were little kids, I'll say, my parents gave us, like, chocolates on Christmas because I think they were worried. Like you said earlier, Mark, they were worried that we would feel left out.
Yeah.
But we dispensed with that tradition, you know, as we got older.
My mother loves Christmas. So I think there was a couple years when I was very young where we had a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a tree now because my wife is not Jewish.
Right.
And I don't mind the tree. It makes the house smell nice, and apparently it means something to some people.
That's what they tell me. Yeah, no, and I mean, that's cool. My aunt actually is the same way. She just likes pretty shiny things. So she likes the tree. She's Jewish.
I'll be honest with you, though.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest with you. The one present a night thing, kind of a jip. You know, even at eight nights, okay, it's eight presents, and granted, you get some mail stuff, maybe you get a check from your aunt, or maybe your grandma will send something.
Right.
But, you know, having experienced Christmas because of my wife, the, you know, many boxes under the tree event of all at once opening many boxes, this goes against everything you believe in. But getting the presents on the proper day in numbers more than two or three,
right.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it is.
It is exciting.
I'm sure that it is exciting, you know, to get that many presents at once.
Yeah.
I mean, like, one day, and then it's over. I mean,
yeah.
Like, in a half an hour, you've gotten all your gifts till your birthday.
Do you guys ever do the Chinese restaurant thing, or what?
Well, not a big Chinese restaurant thing. One thing we did one year, we took a tour of the Lower East Side on Christmas Day, which, for those of you out there who don't know New York, that's the old school Jewish area of Manhattan.
Yeah, back in the day where Jews actually worked on Christmas Day in sweatshops. You just went down there to reflect. There's a bunch of Jews with too much free time.
Right, we took a tour. You should have seen the guy giving this tour.
Yeah.
He was like Ignatius J. Riley reincarnated.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Sneakers were worn down. The soles were worn down in a slanted manner. Like, his feet were clearly... He was really, really obese.
Uh-huh.
And it was clear that his feet were always, like, pointed outwards because his weight was dispersed in such a way.
Oh.
And when we walked by Katz's Delicatessen, he just stood out there drooling and talking about egg creams for, like, 10 minutes.
That was the longest stop on the tour.
Right. Yeah, right?
This is where I go sometimes, always.
Right.
They know me here. Hello, fellas.
Right.
Did you go to Sammy's? Did you go by Sammy's Romanian restaurant?
No, we did not go by.
Have you ever been to Sammy's?
I don't think so.
I haven't either. It's a very important place, and I've never been there either. It's weird. I think it's a meat restaurant, right? It's not. There's no dairy.
It's like a steakhouse.
Right. They have schmaltz on the tables, like, you know, like you can literally, in case you want to spread chicken fat on your chicken fat,
right?
You can do it there. I've never been there, and I feel ashamed that I haven't been there because people have told me to go.
Now, I'm the African American here. I've been to Sammy's more than once.
Yeah, it's
and
good,
it's,
right?
It's chaos. The restaurant itself is utter chaos. I mean, you got tables, because it seems as though all the tables are like for 10 people.
Because, Riley, I think that African-American soul food and Jewish soul food is actually pretty similar.
Well, see, I went to Sammy's when I ate red meat.
All right, go ahead.
So it was a different thing. I don't think they're the same. You know, we use a lot of stuff that's not kosher.
Well, similar. Not, yeah, all right. I guess
a lot of the arteries.
There is a lot of pig involved in African-American soul food.
What do you consider Jewish soul food? Chicken soup, matzo balls, matzo braai?
I feel like both
Kugel.
Both have a lot, are very, very kind of fatty and greasy and delicious.
Yeah, but that's where it ends. I mean, you know, African-American soul food is so much better. I mean, I like Jewish soul food, but
right.
I mean, it's not macaroni and cheese. It's not fried chicken. It's
right.
Not collard greens, you know, cooked in pork.
Or black-eyed peas and rice.
Yeah, I guess you guys win in that department.
Thank you.
It's a good idea, Passman. I think we just saw a defeat in the Passman rules area.
That was not a rule.
Wow.
That was an impromptu declaration.
Isn't that interesting, though? Usually, even though when you do those, there's so much confidence behind it, you assume that you've thought it out. But that one was actually, this was an exception. I enjoyed that. That was very rewarding for me to see you go, I guess maybe not. Anyways, that's the fax machine. Here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. Write these down, folks. One, buy your children inexpensive handmade Christmas gifts they will resent you for. Two, change the title of I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas to I'm Dreaming of a Multicultural Non-Gender Specific Christmas. Or wouldn't that be Holiday? Three, bake holiday sugar cookies in the shape of Gorby Doll. Four, unionize elves at Santa's sweatshop. There's blood on your Xbox, kids. Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. It's Frosty the Snow Person, okay? How many times do we have to fight this battle, people? So what do we got coming up there, Riley? We got Judy Gold.
Judy Gold!
Always good to talk to Judy. She's hilarious.
She's a very funny one.
Great, hilarious, lesbian, tall people.
Yes.
We'll be back with her. But first, I want to do this. This is like a little holiday treat, Mark. It's one of our favorite callers on Morning's Edition, and it happened when Riley and I were talking about the release of Mary Kay Letourneau, the Seattle school teacher who went to prison for having an affair with a 13-year-old student. You remember this?
I remember this.
All right.
Lou and Doe are listening to XM.
What's up, Lou?
What's on your mind,
buddy? Okay, about this subject. First, let me give you a quote. I don't know who said it. Man, all other pleasures are not worth its pain. Now, that refers to sex or love or whatever you want to call it, okay?
Okay.
And when I was 12 or 13 years old,
yeah.
Oh, man, my finest fantasy would be to have some older woman, teacher, I don't give a damn who, take me to bed, and if you were honest, you'd say the same thing.
Oh, no, I
don't. I don't call it rape. In my lifetime, I'm 78.
Okay.
This statutory rape thing came to be.
Okay.
That's not rape. They put down age. You could have a 17, an 18-year-old young man and a 17-year-old girl, and that's rape. Now, that's crap.
Yeah, but this was a...
You're not speaking from experience, are you?
What? What?
He said you're not... Mark Riley said you're not speaking from experience, are you?
No, I wish I were.
Oh, Lord.
You know,
but, the laws on the books here
laws, man. That's
but you got it. Look,
this kid was 12, though.
Not natural.
The kid was 12.
He was 12.
He was 12. His voice might not even changed yet. You don't give him any slack for that?
I mean, he's kind of ugly.
That guy was priceless.
He sure was.
Never called again. Never heard from him again.
We never did hear from
him.
That
was it. So what are you going to do? It's 2 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, along with Mark Riley. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and we've got classic bits and all new stuff for you today, because this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, all people in the middle of their busy holiday weeks. Good morning to you. I hope everything's going well. I hope you're not too stressed out. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
So what we are doing this week is we're not just doing standard best ofs, Mark Riley.
No.
We've got a whole mixture of stuff. We've got a lot of new material you haven't heard before. We've got back-to-back comedy bits. We've got new interviews. We've got some great old stuff. Today we've got a new interview with Judy Gold later in the hour. It's a big Jew fest, my friends. You were there.
Yeah, I know, but I had to recuse myself from the conversation because, as we all know, I'm Buddhist.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. There's more Jew talk in that interview than the entire history of the Al Franken show. So, anyways, right now, how about a little sex, Riley?
I'm straight, man.
Oh, me too. I just thought maybe with... we got a guest who's going to talk about it. Dr. Helen Fisher was on the program a little while ago. She's an anthropology professor at Rutgers University and the author of Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love. And we talked with her about the power of sex because, you know, I feel that repression, that the Christian right wants to repress people's sexuality through fear and through all these bullying tactics, because I think once you make people ashamed of sex or frightened of it, it's very easy to control them in many other ways.
Well, and it's absolutely true. And it's what this country and, in fact, many countries in the world have been about for hundreds upon hundreds of years. Remember that those Salem witch trials back in the 1690s were a little bit about sex.
That's right. Well, we talked with Dr. Fisher on the day when Reverend Barry Lynn of America's United Against Separation of Church and State was also in the studio with us, which made it a little juicier.
Oh, yeah.
What is it about repressing sexuality that how does that function in terms of keeping control of people, and what are the results of that?
I think there's many, you know, first of all, throughout human evolution, the people in control of the culture have tried to control the sexuality. And the parents of young boys and girls try to control their sexuality everywhere on Earth. Because for a Darwinian perspective, I mean, if you have four children and I have no children, you live on and I die out. So the human brain is truly built to have a real opinion about who your children have babies with.
Right.
Because you're passing your own DNA on into eternity. So, everybody has an opinion about who their children are going to copulate with and marry
right.
and breed with. So I'm not surprised that the right is involved in it. It's their solipsisticness, the fact that they want to tell the rest of us how to do our breeding, that so astonishes me, that they are so willing to, you know, co-opt sort of a whole country to see, they want us to see the whole world their way. I suppose that's an adaptive mechanism from a Darwinian perspective, but you would think that the human animal would have evolved out of that somehow.
So you think in some sense it's about, first of all, making more Christians who have the same
sure.
ideology as they do.
Yes, that's, you know what, they've even begun to think that religion is a little bit like a gene. They call it a meme instead
yeah.
of a gene.
Mm-hmm.
And that it a religion is designed to propagate itself. So it's going to create all kinds of values and ideals and purposes and goals that continue to pull in more members, to keep more members and reproduce more members.
But also, isn't it when you repress somebody's basic biological needs like that, being that sex is one of them, don't they become more easily controlled in other areas of their life?
Probably. But you know, it doesn't work. I mean,
right.
that's the real bottom line, is
right.
this abstinence does not work. Because, in fact, it creates a real problem for the children and for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because the children, girls, they'll go 3 years or so, you know, believing in this abstinence only process. And then one night they have too much beer and they go off and they sleep with a boy. And
Or seven.
and they have no contraception. They
right.
have no idea what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a much worse pickle than if they had had. There's so much data on this
yeah.
that sexual education creates a sexual intelligence.
And when you buckle, when you live in shame, and the possibilities of you just doing it without contraception because you don't think you're ever going to do it is probably higher.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Not only that, but, I mean, you know, sex was built not only to be fun, but to be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you've got the right partner and it's the right time, I mean, a lot of these, I'm not advocating everybody, as far as I'm concerned, should make their own decisions. But the long and short of it is it can be good for you in many ways.
Even alone.
Now, you know, it's interesting. When you look at how people try to control folks sexually over the years, there's got to be an imbalance between the attempt to control men and the attempt to control women.
Yes, and that is, you see that throughout the agrarian revolution. For the last 10,000 years, the control of women has been much stronger than the control of men. What's interesting is, you know, in hunting and gathering societies where women are extremely economically powerful, they're also sexually and socially powerful, and there's not all these rules against female sexuality that we have inherited from our farming past. On the farm, the man really had a tremendous amount of economic power, and the woman was really the vessel that bore his seed. And so it became, in all agrarian societies, female sexuality is extremely controlled. And of course, now what we're seeing in the world is women moving back into the workforce and economically becoming more powerful and trying to express their sexuality the way they were sort of built to do.
And that scares simple men.
Yes, it does. Simple men.
We can't have all that girl sex power running around the house.
Well, you know why it scares simple men, don't.
Why?
Because they're scared they're going to lose control of themselves.
Of Absolutely. Their own sexuality, of their own genetic future. There really are some gender differences. And one thing that happens is when you inject testosterone, a person's thinking becomes more narrow, more focused, and more on the present.
Mm-hmm.
And men tend to be more, this is averages, men tend to be more inflexible than
yeah.
women do. They tend to think more abstractly, good and evil. And these guys running this country at this point seem to have very high testosterone. And they must have, I mean, their brain must be actually patterned to make than actually feel that this is simple.
Yeah.
They've lost the nuance that the rest of us can see.
Well, it helps that the Republican and conservative ideology is so narrow in and of itself. Maybe that promotes more testosterone levels, you know,
it's
getting
true.
Higher.
That could be a feedback system. In other words, if you live in it, you can, yeah, it could be.
You know, I'm sitting here, I don't know about the testosterone level, but I mean, I'm red-faced because you referred in such excruciating detail, women, vessel that bore his seed. Can you imagine how embarrassed I am?
Well, an awful lot of women are horrified.
No,
we've got 10,000 years of women who've got a problem with this.
Can I ask you a question? You know, I traveled when I was with the ACLU and worked for the ACLU with the Ed Meese Pornography Commission around the United States, looking at everything they did, all their goofy slideshows, and they'd visit adult bookstores in other cities, and it's like a field trip, and I'd go with them. One of the things, though, it is America as prudish as some on the religious right would like to think. It seems to me that the Internet, the VCR, were adopted by some people, an enormous number of people, only when they discovered that those technologies gave them access to sexually explicit material.
Yeah. I once was talking to a woman from Asia, and I said that Americans were prudes, and she said, how could you say that? You're constantly talking about sex, you're constantly worrying, you know, you're constantly doing it. And I thought to myself, that is curious, because I feel that we are prudes. I've often thought, you know, the high testosterone is associated with not only sex, but with aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to be a very aggressive country, whereas the other countries seem to be more sexual. It's almost as if our chemistry has gone towards aggressiveness and controlling sexuality, whereas other countries have gone for sexual expression.
Well, that's an interesting point, because porn is, I think it has something to do with capitalism, with the product of sex and with the objectification of women and the objectification of sex. That, you know, it's not really about intimacy, you know, in terms of how sexualized this country is. It's about pornography. It can be about strippers. It's very interesting how mainstream strippers and pornography are in this culture. And that's not necessarily that's a very specific way of defining sexuality, and it has to do with marketing.
Yeah. I don't know. I would think that if we dialed back a million years ago, we would probably find some porn there, too. I mean,
oh,
I think
are you kidding? It was probably the primary form of entertainment in cave time days. What else are you going to do?
Yeah. It's like, what else are you going to put on the wall?
What about those bison hunts? Yeah. Bison hunts, that's the more aggressive use of testosterone. Go after the bison.
Live sex shows were probably, they probably weren't entertainment. They were probably an inevitability.
That's true.
They build houses.
But even then they were trying to control. I don't know. You know, you take a look at hunting and gathering societies, and I'm not advocating this, but young children will start to play at sex very young.
Yeah.
And by age 5 and 6. By age 10, they're playing actually at copulation and then marrying and even at divorcing and adultery and remarrying. So it's as if they're practicing. It's as if the human animal needs its childhood to practice at the game of love, which is really the most powerful and important game we play.
Isn't that what Wilhelm Reich was all about? Isn't that why he became such a threat culturally? Was that he decided that if Freud was right and that, you know, repression caused neurosis, that kids should be educated about sex as young as they are able to understand that, and it should be demystified in order for the culture to be less neurotic.
Right. I would agree with them. I mean, you can control the human animal. We have a flexible brain, but we've got some basic drives, and the sex drive is one of them. The drive to love is another. The drive to attach is another. Drive for ambition. I mean, there's all kinds of them. But when a culture will work better when you accept the human nature and try to understand it and bring it down the kinds of paths so that it's productive as opposed to unproductive.
Dr. Fisher gave us a lot to think about, and I guess you were all thinking about it too, because we got some great calls in response to this interview. We'll hear them when we come back.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're on vacation, but this is new good stuff. You might have heard some of this stuff, but we got new good stuff coming up. We're listening to an interview with Dr. Helen Fisher about the controlling power of sex, and we're going to hear what listeners had to say about it. And Dr. Fisher and Reverend Barry Lynn were still with us when we took these calls, so enjoy. Michael in Orange County, how are you, Michael? What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. All right.
Just a quick observation on Dr. Fisher's comment about aggression and suppression in this country. It's interesting to note that of the other world leaders, how many of them have been or still are women?
Mm,
That's it. There have been quite a few.
There's just as many in the third world countries as there are in the first world countries. I mean, Pakistan, India, the Philippines, et cetera. And that's because in those countries, it's apparently the family, a particular family, that goes to the top. And if there's a man gets knocked off, then his wife will take it because it's a family issue, not a male-female issue. But there's remarkably few women at the top leaders in the world.
Yeah.
They don't start early enough. They're not as aggressive as young women. They're more involved in family as young women. And by middle age, when they do become more interested in politics, it's a little too late for them.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you know, Barry, I think, has got in front of him an example of some of the propaganda that the religious right is putting out to children to stifle their interest in sex. But this particular thing, which we actually read on the air last week, is a fairy tale. You want to read that, Barry?
Yeah, this is your tax dollars at work. $800 million of this junk over the past 5 years. It's a book in a series called Choosing the Best, which I believe was written by a former director of Campus Crusade for Christ in a previous life. But Choosing the Best tells the story of a knight who married a village maiden instead of the princess because the princess offered so many tips on slaying the local dragon. Moral of the story, notes this Choosing the Best textbook, occasional suggestions and assistance may be all right, but too much of it will lessen a man's confidence or even turn him away from his princess. Can you imagine that the federal government is paying for this junk in after-school programs, mainly all over the United States.
That's not a tough fable to deconstruct, is it?
We were talking about deconstructing Shark Tale. That's tough. This is simple, and it's obvious. Isn't it, Doctor, also true that one of the things that happens, if you control women's child-bearing capacities, you restrict it. You guarantee that they're going to be out of the job market and be non-competitive at the very times when those men, weak-willed as we are saying, gee, can we really go into the job force and compete with a woman? If she's not there, we win by default. Fortune 500 companies are reduced, I think, of a reduced number of women as the head. They're in single digits, I believe.
Oh, they are. Less than 5% of women are in, running major companies or in the boardroom. But, you know, it's interesting that these men are so threatened by it because I really see men and women as like 2 feet. They need each other to get ahead. The brains were built, they're different brains. They were built to work together. And those, we now know that those companies that have a large percentage of women in managerial arenas do much better.
But also on an economic level, I mean, it's very hard to get by if you don't have a two-family income.
That's right. As a matter of fact, it is expanding men's roles because now that wives work, they can more middle-aged men are going back to school, they're retiring earlier. As women's roles are expanding, men's roles are expanding. It's astonishing that these people are hanging on to a paradigm that doesn't work anymore in the 21st century.
But I think it all adds.
It's almost like a response, just a fear response to the emotion of society.
Oh yeah, and that these people want to live in fear, and they want to live in this. It's baffling to me, just on a basic level, that so many of the religious right voted against their economic interests.
Exactly,
they do,
and then on top of that, they don't want the women in their household to work, and they want to have more kids. I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of stress, anxiety, and panic that they are really in, and they just put that dogmatic cap right on that powder keg of panic, and they get all starry-eyed, and they move through life in a completely delusional universe.
No, and it is, and it's terribly dangerous because they're trying to suck us into the same universe. You know, they're trying to say that everybody has to make the same choices they make. I suspect, Doctor, you could make a decision that you would stay, that a woman would stay at home, a man could stay at home, but they don't want you to make choices. They want to tell you what your options are, limited ones, and then you fit in or they hurt you.
Let's take a call. Marlene in Miami. How are you, Marlene? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you.
What's on your mind?
Okay. The question that I propose is, I hope it's not too intellectual, but aren't we sort of facing maybe a division between the established church and Orthodox ideas versus a mystical, authentic experience in people?
I think it's a very
good
point.
No, it's a great question.
Barry, what do you think?
No, I mean, I think that, that the varieties of religious experience that we have in this country, they used to be more personal. You had some experience, the spiritual, the mystical, that was enough. Now, of course, you not only go beyond that into organized churches, but now you have the mega churches, which literally do have salad bars in them.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there literally are churches that have that. That I mentioned that was absolutely right.
Do they call it like, you know, blue cheesy Jesus dressing?
No, they actually don't. But
right.
If we went and marketed it to them, they might. So I think there is something to be said for the fact that it is viewed by the religious right, the so-called religious right, as inauthentic religious experience unless you're having it with them, preferably while they're passing the collection plate or asking you for money over the television.
So the time that I moved a chair when I was on acid with my mind doesn't count?
No.
No.
No, Kreskin.
No. Oh. You weren't on acid at that time.
Oh, I just, oh. Yeah. Exactly. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, hey. I have a psychic hotline, too.
Sandra, in my hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sandra. How you doing?
Just fine. How are y'all?
All right.
Good.
All right. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, the religious writers saying that, you know, they're so worried about gay marriages and all. You know, I've been together with my partner 25 years.
The best of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's 34 past the hour, Morning Sedition. We've got a lot of stuff to get into with Judy Gold. We had her on the show about a month ago, and she actually got us into a little bit of trouble with some of the stuff she said. So this time, we were a little nervous, or hinky, as Larson says. Check it out. So you did us a favor. You came in on this beautiful holiday week. It's a holiday week.
Right.
That's when we're playing.
And here's the deal.
Yeah.
I come in during the holidays. I have kids. They don't have school.
Yeah.
I have not a lot of free time.
Why didn't you bring your kids?
I get criticized the minute I walk in here.
Well, you walk in.
Wait, I got criticized for what I said the last time I was on the radio.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Because it was bad radio etiquette. You got us into trouble. You know? It wasn't
okay, well, I have to give you credit that... You brought me back. Okay. That's number one.
We brought you back. And not only that, but we let the thing go. And we just wanted to make sure it didn't happen
again. You didn't let it go because I got a call from Renee. And then I get in here and I get spoken to.
I had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
I had nothing to do with that.
So that was it. So I made a faux pas.
All I said was, where's my friend Judy? She's a half hour late today. Maybe that's why you caught a little.
I have kids.
So what is that an excuse? You people with kids are like some sort of conspiracy.
I cannot
wait until you have a child. I got a 7-year old.
Yeah, but wait, you don't.
Okay.
Do you use them as an excuse, Riley?
Yeah.
I mean, my brother. I haven't talked to my brother in 5 years. You know why?
Why?
I got 3 kids. I haven't talked to my brother in 5 years.
Right.
Can we hang out? I can't. I got kids. Hey, can I talk to you a minute? I just lost my arm in an accident. I got one of the kids under the sink. I can't. What do you do?
Okay, I want you to. Are you planning on having children?
I'd like to, but it's getting a little late in the game, isn't it? How old are you? You're like 50.
It's not
50?
Too late in the game.
All right.
Too late in the game.
That is it. That is it.
No.
Are you 50?
Riley had kids at 46.
My father was 47 when he had me.
My father was like 10.
My father was 46 when he had me. It's a
tradition. My father was 47. My mother was 40.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah. And
okay.
Now my father's dead and my mother's 100. So, all right. But here's the thing.
What?
No, I there's advantages and disadvantages of having kids at an older age. I mean, the thing is, as Riley will attest to, you're more settled, you're a better parent,
yeah.
You know
yeah.
how to
yeah.
deal with issues,
that
and it's not all about you.
That sounds exactly like you, Judy. More settled.
You know, you have not watched me. You have not seen me with my children.
I'm sorry.
So you don't know me as a parent. You know me as a comedian and a lover.
Okay. Why do you have to tell everybody? You got to tell everybody that I was that one guy.
Uh-oh, you're out.
One time. See, what happened was I was with Mark, and then I became a lover.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you wouldn't be the first one either.
That's right. I know. I heard about the girlfriend.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the call from my wife. All right, so tell me about the kids. So you're older. You're a better parent.
Don't you think, Riley?
Yes, I agree.
You know,
he told me that the other day.
You're not as impulsive. You don't fly off the handle about stuff. You don't decide you want to go away for 3 days and party.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. You're just. But you can't. You want to play ball and you're like, ow.
How
that's the problem.
How do you handle the holidays with the kids? Is your ex is not Jewish?
She is Jewish.
Oh, so you're both Jewish.
That would be correct.
Yes.
So if she's Jewish and I'm Jewish, that means we're both Jewish. That would be both of us.
That the kids would be both Jewish.
Probably. Right.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
See now the donors.
Uh huh.
both Jewish.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You went to a Jewish donor place?
No, I didn't go to a Jew donor. When you go on the when you go and buy sperm, right, you can go by religion. There's so many ways to buy sperm.
You can go by... assuming that they're telling the truth. Do the kids look Jewish?
Well...
Come on.
Well, Ben looks just like me.
Yeah.
Do I look Jewish?
Yeah.
I have Jew face
all over me.
Yeah,
Jew face and Jew
hair. I am Jew.
Yeah.
And Henry... No, Henry looks kind of Irish, eh?
Really?
Yeah. But so, Sharon is half Irish, half Jewish.
So what? Oh, so that means...
And then the donor, he's like, you know, a quarter not
Irish.
Jewish.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you explained that to him?
No.
How old is he?
8.
You should tell him.
What?
That he's not all Jewish.
He know. Well, no. Shut up! Wait!
What?
I hate you sometimes.
How do you, no, you don't. How do you explain the holidays to them about the Christmas?
The Christmas?
Yeah.
Well, Henry goes to Hebrew school.
Okay, so...
So, Jewy Jewman.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of Christian friends, and he knows that... I don't know. How did you get explained Christmas?
Well, we just basically, we said, why can't we have what they have?
And what'd your parents say?
They said we could have both.
And you had a Christmas tree?
My mother had a Christmas tree for a couple of years when I was a little kid, and then it went away.
I think that's sick.
What do you mean it's sick?
I think, you know, you're a Jew or you're not a Jew.
I'm definitely a Jew. Am I not a Jew?
You're a Jew.
I know.
But...
My mother has this thing for Christmas trees. What can I tell you?
Is she a Jew?
Of course she's a Jew.
100%
Jewish? 100% Jewish.
My daughter wants to convert.
She does?
Yes, she does.
So she wants a tree out of the
house. She came home yesterday with a dreidel.
Really?
Yes. And explained to me each and every symbol, what it meant, and she drew it herself.
Okay, she's coming over.
Yeah. Isn't that fun when they, like, because she's probably excited about the weird letters.
Does she go to a Jewy school?
No. No,
well,
there are Jewish kids there.
Right, how did she learn about it?
She learned about it from her friends.
Hmm.
Like about maybe 70% of her.
Now, would you be upset if she converted?
I wouldn't be upset, no. Not at all. That's her choice to make when she's old enough. That's I don't put that. I don't
now,
put me on
her. Now, do you celebrate Christmas?
Yeah. Kwanzaa, too.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
My wife actually goes to the
school
and
explains
Kwanzaa.
Can you admit Kwanzaa is a ripoff of Hanukkah?
No.
Okay.
What do you do on Kwanzaa? How do you celebrate it?
Light candles.
Yeah.
Where do we get the hell
from?
Yeah,
but you don't wear the flashy clothes.
Oh, there's plenty of Jews wearing flashy clothes while they light the candles.
Not the orange stuff.
Do you have to wear a kente cloth scarf?
You don't have to.
But people do,
right?
It
helps, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, see, they have candles in wherever they invented Kwanzaa.
Okay, but I'm just saying.
That would be L.A., actually.
Yeah, it's a ripoff.
Los Angeles has candles.
It's a little bit of a ripoff.
Did you hear about those Jews in New Mexico?
What?
The Jews that were, they weren't Jews, they were Hispanic, Latino people.
Right.
And they were in a church, and they were having a service, right. Yet they were lighting Sabbath candles, all right? And this has been a tradition in this church for hundreds of years, right? And it turns out these were Jews that turned into Catholics to escape the Spanish Inquisition, came up through Mexico, had no idea they were Jewish for 500 or 600 years, but these traditions were left within their Catholic mass that were Jewish. Isn't that a great story?
Yeah, but now are they Catholic?
Well, now they're confused. You know, they've basically been told that they've been Catholics for like hundreds of years, and they've been told they're Jewish. And there's a lot you have to do. You have to get used to a new language, praying a new way. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. They're called reversos or something.
Reversos?
They're reformos. Or
no, they're not
conversos.
Reversos.
Conversos. Conversos.
You are so making this up.
I don't think I am.
Is he making this up, Riley?
I don't know. This is the first time hearing him.
Conversos.
Yeah, that sounds right. Conversos.
Sounds like a game.
Sneaker.
No, it's not. Oh,
it is a game. It's
man. Riley got the sneaker before. Yeah, I said game.
It
said
actually,
sneaker.
Okay, you're right. I'm doing a little plug for a game company. Conversos is a game. It's a game that only Catholics can play. And whoever wins gets to be Jewish.
Oh, okay.
That's a great game.
It is. It's very fun to play on
But
holidays.
You know what's bad about
what?
That game?
What?
They have like a little knife,
oh, no.
And then you have to
get circumcised. Is that where you're going with
it? Am I allowed to say circumcised?
Of course,
you can say that.
Yeah, they do a little snippet.
Yeah,
have you ever, snippet. Yeah,
you went to your son's bris. I'm assuming. Did
yeah,
you have
well,
that?
For how Jewy am I, Mark? How long have you known me?
But my good friend Sam Lipsight is a Jew. He's not married to a Jew, but there was a discussion. And
they left it on. They did. See, that pisses me off, because that's the first rite of passage for a Jew, is the circumcision.
Yeah, but is it necessary?
You know what? There's many different... Why are you looking at the TV and not me when we're talking?
Because look what it is. It's that robot that cleans the floor. Go ahead. Come on.
I thought
that's
it was
not
still
nothing.
Montel.
Look at that. Look
that
what
has
that
smart
does.
Sensor technology.
Yeah.
It cleans the entire room.
Yeah.
Well, you could just sit there and vegetate.
Yeah, right. Rite of passage.
No, I just think it's the first rite of passage. I believe. And come on, I have a friend. Same thing. Her husband was French. Yeah. Is French. They're now not together. Shocking. And so she did not get the kid circumcised. And he's had like 3 infections.
He has.
Yes.
Has a kid? How old's the kid?
Thank God
he's
for
like
my
9.
Mother and father.
Jesus.
Well, who's having sex with that child?
It's not sex.
Oh.
Well, you know what? He can say that, but I can't say the other thing that I said the last time.
You can say have sex.
I'm so afraid. I'm like completely paranoid.
Look, we're going to try this again. Judy Gold is in need of a girlfriend. She's desperate.
I'm not desperate.
She's very attractive.
Right. I'm hot, aren't I, Riley?
She's a hot lesbian.
I am a hot lesbian. I have to say, I work out. I have 2 kids. That's the...
Hot lesbian with 2 kids and desperate. Sedition.
I'm not desperate.
Sedition at airamericaradio.com. Wait, I know you're not. Why are you... Am I not what you thought I was now? Is
no, but it's like, do you really think I'm desperate?
No, oh my God. I don't know. Are you? A little?
A little bit.
Oh, no. I'd never believe that.
Here's the problem.
Can you hold on to the problem until we come back?
All right. We need to discuss the problem.
That's fine. We're talking to Judy Gold. It's Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Your daily wake-up call to arms on Air America Radio.
Judy Gold, I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley, you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America. So what's it, I said that Judy was desperate, she said she wasn't, she said she might be, what's the problem?
Okay, this is what, I think that there's another layer that we're missing here.
Okay, what is it?
Now, I got dumped. Now, I was with someone for 19 years.
That's a long
time. I know.
Did you have some sort of agreement? Were you monogamous? What?
We were monogamous.
Did you ever, like, bring a third person in or anything?
No, it was so boring, let me tell you.
Okay.
But it was also, like, you know, I was so into my career. Like, it was all about comedy. So
when
I didn't
you
really
met
care.
Her, you still had the curl on the side of your face.
Oh, my God, I have to go. I can't believe that I have an audition in about 5 minutes. So, actually, I think I developed the curl.
From her? Yeah?
Yeah. So, but, you know, we were separate. You were on the road.
Yes,
you know, it's like you were married. First of all, don't even start with me.
I know, you were married,
and no one even knew, okay? Not one comic. We're like, he's married? What? One time I'm on this boat, the Comedy Cellar boat, and he goes, this is my wife. I go, what are you talking about? You have a wife?
I don't have that one anymore.
I know. Now you have a new one.
Yeah.
You get? All right. Anyway. So the thing is, you know, we had, you know, we were like Bill and Hill, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we were partners. We're really good, you know. Supportive,
right.
You know, good team doing things. But, you know, there was a lack of intimacy. And
I met her like twice. She didn't talk, right?
She's very cold.
She didn't talk to you.
She's cold. I got to have a partner that doesn't talk that much. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. She's very cautious, and she's a business person, and, you know, I have no boundaries. Anyway,
right.
So the point is that I got dumped.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the layer is, where I, you know, she's with the other person.
So how was that going on?
How long was that going on before I caught him?
Yeah.
About 2 months.
You caught him?
Caught.
Like, hello,
she's
here?
She's going to kill me for saying this.
Can you
the
say Louisville Slugger?
Oh, they don't? Yeah.
Cell phone.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, I noticed the behavior was changing. Like, this is someone who, like, I'm pregnant, and I'm like, Sharon, maybe you should turn your cell phone on in case my water breaks. Like, she wouldn't, she's like, oh, I left it home, I can't find my keys, my wallet got stolen. You know, it was, like, always that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, she was, like, attached to that cell phone 24/7. Like, always on the cell. I'm like, why are you, and then there was a name, and it said, for phone number, it said secret.
Oh,
so that's what really, is that?
She actually had to write secret in?
Well, you can make, you can make, you can make,
okay.
You can take some number secret.
Okay.
Do you want this to be secret?
Oh, I get it. It didn't come up like secret.
She should have just said, I am cheating. That should have been number. I am cheating with this person at this phone number. Secret.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think the hardest part for me is the lack of trust. Now, I don't trust her at all, ever. I won't, you know.
Well, you don't have to right now, right? With that kind of stuff.
Right. And so, you know, I lost that trust. And also the dumpage. You know.
That's
I'm a tot. Believe me, I've had plenty of opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plenty.
Yeah.
And
I offered like 2 or 3 times.
We kissed, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, but that was it.
Now, I made out with a couple of guys.
So now, okay, so you're not desperate. You just, you've got a chip on your
Here's
shoulder.
The thing. No, I don't have to.
And you can't trust anybody.
The thing with me is I'm a family type person.
Right.
I love my kids.
Okay.
I love you know, I just love the whole, you know, two parents, kids, having fun, and
right,
also another life. You know, I just really, I'm very well-rounded.
Okay, so sedition at airamericaradio.com. In the subject line, put, you know, read Judy Gold's need for a lover.
Uh-oh.
Partner,
oh, that's nice.
Partner.
Don't you hate the word partner? Sounds like you and a
mailbox.
What do you
hate? What's wrong?
Together.
Partner, it's, lover.
I don't care. Lover, fine.
Lover's sort of silly, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like you guys all you do is have sex all the time.
Looking for love.
She said sex! Oh, my God!
I got a question for you.
Yes, Riley.
How are you going to establish, you know, the trust is one thing, mm-hmm. but the coordination with two kids and two people is a difficult thing.
Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have been dating Riley.
Mm-hmm.
She has the kids like two nights a week, so
that's
and
when
then,
you go out and do
and,
it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, they were with me all the time, and now they're kind of going to her house. So
it's, oh, okay, it's back and forth. Okay.
Yeah, it's not that back and forth because I won't let them go there during the week.
So who have you dated?
Straight people.
Whoa.
That's my thing.
Did
I always go for the straight girl, and then I get, you know,
the straight girl that wants to try it out.
The straight girl that's like, oh, my God, I'm so confused.
Oh.
But I'm going to use you to figure it out. And then 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, dump!
Straight.
Dumpy dumpman.
The two dates you went out with were straight girls?
One wasn't, but one was not.
Yeah.
And the other, yeah.
Yeah, and what happened?
I'm not going through the whole.
Did you go to dinner? When did she freak out?
It was an ongoing thing,
oh, really?
And then I just said I can't anymore.
You can't. It's like it's got to be exhausting
what?
For you.
It's I have, you know, emotionally I can't be dealing with someone's
who's like, well, no, wait, I can't.
Yeah,
I can't do this.
I want to do this, and it's like, no, I can't.
Play
have,
these games?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I love drama and games. All right, I'm being really honest
but
right
one,
now.
But that
but, you know, I love
boring,
that. Right? I love the drama and the whole, oh, my God, is she gonna, does she like me? You know, like, I love that whole. Because then if they're really available, I'm like, ew. Why do you want, you know what I mean?
How could you want me?
I know. Isn't that horrible?
It is.
Why
I say
do you
that
want
to my
me?
Wife
ew,
every
don't
morning.
Don't even touch me. Ugh.
Every morning I wake up and go, why? How
like,
could you possibly like me?
I need someone like to beat me up and tell me I'm horrible, and then I'll be like, I love you.
Yeah, you're perfect. Hit me.
Oh, God, here we go.
Hit me. Oh, my God.
Domestic violence. She's advocating domestic violence.
Sedition at airamericaradio.com. If you'd like to.
Funny and smart.
And emotionally abusive.
And emotionally abusive. Funny, smart, and emotionally abusive.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think? That's
yeah.
What, those are good.
No, I think it's terrific. I think you're going to get a lot of people, you know, because there's a lot of our audience.
Oh, wait.
Are
can
funny
we talk
and smart
about.
And emotionally
wait,
abusive.
I have some other things. No fanny packs.
Right, of course.
No
does anyone still wear them other than our chief engineer?
Oh, my God. Okay, let me tell you something.
Haven't they moved on to backpack?
No, yet? These lesbians,
yeah.
Some of these lesbians,
yeah.
It's just like they need a show about
fanny packs?
No, about, like, dress. I mean,
I know,
first
I know.
Of all, the fanny packs,
put your
the comfortable
down.
Shoes.
How about the collars up? What's with the collars
you know,
up still?
Right. I don't know. It's
mullets?
Like,
mullets out
you
in?
Know, mullet, there are some bad. You know, it depends on what area of the country they're
yeah.
from.
Why do they have mullets, some of them? Because even in parts of part of the country, is that what is that?
I don't know, but there's other people with mullets, too.
I mean,
that must be. But the fanny pack thing drives me up a wall, because my mother's, you know, 82. She has a fanny pack. That's fine, because she thinks it's in style.
Yeah.
But these are lesbians in their 40s, and they're walking around with fanny packs.
Oh.
But, you know, the fanny pack thing really grosses
well,
me out.
What other stuff? Give me some other fashion
socks.
Of the
socks with the Birkenstocks?
Oh.
Not
no,
good.
No. But are you going to be dating someone with Birkenstocks?
No.
Wear
I mean,
Birkenstocks?
No, I'm not.
Not like who would wear them all the time?
I need a
maybe you go to the beach.
All right, here's
or
an example.
Like.
Here's another example.
Yeah.
One time, Sharon and I
okay.
were like, we'll go to the gay pride parade.
Why
you
not?
Know?
Yeah.
So we were in the area, so we said, we'll go and we'll go watch. So we're on Fifth Avenue for about, I don't know, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll look at each other and we're mm-hmm. like, let's go to Bergdorf's and buy makeup. So that's mm-hmm. what I like to do, okay? So, you know, I would rather go to Barney's or
right.
something like that. I don't need to look at the drag queens.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. What is the alliance with the lesbians and gay men?
What do you mean, the
why
alliance?
Does that well, I mean, it's like, why do you don't...
Some people think there's absolutely no alliance.
Okay.
Some people think that the fact that lesbians are called lesbians and gay men are called gay is, like, you know, completely separatist.
Right.
And that everyone should be called gay.
Okay.
And then there's those lesbians who feel like, you know, it's just that there's some women who are just completely, I don't want to have anything to do with men, I can't stand men.
Gay
there
or
are
not.
Places that are all, you know, women, no men, which I find... abhorrent. I think it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And then there's men that, you know, just can't stand women. They hate women so much and they don't want women around. But I think it's more... I think it's more prevalent that there are women who do not want to be around men.
So there isn't really an alliance, other than maybe a community alliance.
I think there is a community, a political alliance.
Yeah, yeah,
I think that lesbians have helped in the fight against AIDS and, you know, just political issues.
Sure.
But there is this whole, like that women's music festival.
Yeah.
If you have a son, you cannot bring your son on the property of this woman.
I got kicked out of an event once.
You did not.
I did. I went to hear a lecture in Boston when I was in college. It was by a woman named, I think her last name was Daly. She had written this book about using photographs, advertising photography to prove that there's been a sort of earth-killing sexist agenda in advertising since day one. And I was very interested in the book. I found her fascinating. I was the only guy there. It was at a woman's space. And a woman came up to me and said, look, you know, you're free to stay here as an American, but as a man, we don't want you here.
Wow.
And what did you say?
I stayed.
Did you get laid?
No. All right.
Sorry.
Judy, I love you. Have a happy holiday.
Are you done?
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Happy Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you.
Hanukkah to you.
Happy Kwanzaa. How does that sound?
Hanukkah, come lay be min.
Okay. That's it. Thank you. There you go. All right, thanks, Judy. We won't get into too much trouble this time. Okay, we're out of here for today. Is that all right, Riley?
Yeah.
But we'll be back tomorrow with Todd Barry, Darlene Love, and our favorite critics, Jeff Jarvis and Alan Richman. See you later, Riley.
See you tomorrow, Marin.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air.